as I read all these blogs from all these professional designers, there was one theme. Nobody had a finished room in their house. And so it just seemed like finishing the room was the real challenge.
Welcome to Milton & King's On the Wall podcast, where we engage in conversations with artists, designers, and more. In this episode, we speak with Linda Weinstein, the creator and producer of the biannual event, The One Room Challenge. If you enjoy these conversations, please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Good, thanks. So nice to finally talk to you.
Yeah, it is. Great to finally connect. We've always contacted through email, so this is good. This is different.
Yeah.
So what's going on? How's Florida?
Florida is beautiful right now. It's crisp, yeah, not humid, sunny, maybe in the mid-70s. How's LA?
Actually, LA's been quite rainy and stormy, but you know, I don't mind because it's either that or we're in a drought. So,
are you near the mudslides?
No, I'm in Orange County, so I'm which you're familiar with, right? So,
yep.
I'm not anywhere in like Malibu or Hollywood Hills or anything like that, where they're or anywhere on the coastline, really. I mean, if you're off of PCH, it can always get a little dangerous at certain spots. But you know, it's just the ground out here. It doesn't retain water, and it just turns into sludge when it gets wet. So.
Are you feeling like this is the new normal?
I don't know. Things go in cycles. I remember back, I want to say it was like 97, 98. I think it was 98 was when it was like really bad. And there was like an El Nino, and it was like the craziest, most amount of rain we've ever had. And then, you know, 5-6 years later, we're in a drought and it doesn't rain at all. And
yeah,
you know, so I think these things just tend to go in cycles.
We've had 400-year hurricanes 3 times in a row.
Oh, wow. Have you been in like the direct path of hurricanes where you've had,
yeah,
to evacuate?
The last one we were. Hurricane Ian, we were in the direct path. Thankfully, my neighborhood was fine. We were fine, but the area itself had major devastation.
Wow.
Still recovering.
That's always the freaky thing, like, you know, about moving to Florida, or, you know, you always think like, you know, from over here, you just see the map and you just see this giant storm just covering the whole state. And you go, wow, no one's spared, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I grew up in LA. So I was happy to leave the earthquakes. And then once I left, they barely ever happened.
Yeah. We haven't, I mean, we've had a few little tremors here and there, but nothing really to make much note about, I would say.
Yeah.
So what, you grew up in LA?
Yes.
So like born and raised here?
Yeah, in the valley.
Oh, so that's for people that might not be familiar, there's technically two valleys, and people say the valley, they usually mean the San Fernando Valley, the North Valley that's above Hollywood in Los Angeles. Is that what you're,
yes,
talking about?
Okay. Yeah.
That's where you'd have like Woodland Hills, Agoura Hills, what else? Calabasas.
Tarzana, Encino. Yeah. Yeah, all of them.
Where the Kardashians live.
Yeah, that's Calabasas. Yeah. So I don't know if Calabasas is technically still in the valley. I don't think so.
Oh, really?
It might be. It might be the edge of the valley. You know, it's funny because they've changed the name since I've been gone also. Canoga Park is now the Hills or something, and I don't know.
So how long did you live in LA for before you made the move to Florida?
So, you know, it went, so from Los Angeles, I was there until I moved to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, to, I was dating my husband at the time. So, that was the 90s. And then we got married. We went to the UK for a couple of years.
Oh,
loved,
wow,
it. Our daughter was born there. Yeah, as a married couple. And I gave birth over there. My daughter was born in the UK.
Wow.
And then from there, we went to New Jersey, which was culture shock for me. And
why was that? What was it about New Jersey that was a culture shock?
Well, from California, you think that everyone is like the Sopranos.
Oh, right.
It's not so at all. Uh-huh. It's gorgeous. It's called the Garden State for a reason. Stunningly beautiful landscapes and things. But I didn't know that because I hadn't spent any time there.
Mm-hmm.
And became a very avid gardener, loved it. That's where I started my blog and all of this evolved. And then we came down to Florida 10 years ago.
So did your, I don't know how it works in the UK, but did your daughter get UK citizenship from being born there like you would here? Or is it different?
No. Yeah, it's different. You have to, one of us have had to have been a citizen, or we had to have had residency there for 5 years and we didn't.
Oh,
so
okay.
She's an American citizen.
Oh, gotcha.
And the argument is still out on whether or not she can be president, and that's all.
How funny.
But here's a fast forward. She doesn't want to be.
I don't blame her. That's not, doesn't seem like a job that's, I don't know.
So we won't, yeah, we won't have to worry
about
that conversation.
Your average person wants to have. So when you grew up in LA, so you basically lived, you were born here, sounds like you were raised here until you essentially you're almost married. So you were an,
yeah.
You're an adult. Did you have interest in interior design as a younger, you know, like a teen or anything like that, or early on?
I was obsessed with design. I started actually in fashion, and
okay.
I worked as a costumer, and I worked on several moonlighting. I'm dating myself. Armed and Dangerous, Ruthless People. I was in the union, and then the writers went on strike, which is very reminiscent of what just happened. And they were on strike for a very long time. And I thought, I can't live like this. So I went into sales.
So is this the writer's strike? I'm trying to remember. Was this the writer's strike that was like in the early 2000s? I think it was.
No, because I left. It was before that, because I left in the 90s.
Okay.
So it was the writer's strike of the 90s.
That's so funny that you said Armed and Dangerous, because that's just not a movie I hear referenced ever. And I love that movie, and I love John Candy.
I met John Candy. I met Bruce Willis. I've met, you know, so many people, and it was really fun, and I loved it. And I loved being on the set, and I loved the long, crazy hours and the people and the creative energy and everything.
It's a whole different life, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But honestly, today, if I think about how would I had a family and had a, you know, a personal life on top of it, it would have been hard.
Yeah. How did you get into doing that? Doing costuming and that whole world?
I saw an interview with a person who didn't know it was a job. I saw an interview with a person talk about that's what she did. And I thought, now that sounds fascinating. And I reverse engineered it on how do you do this? And you have to go work in a costume house or something like that to get in the union. And so I just started telling, it's a crazy story. I started telling everyone I know, this is what I want to do. This is what, bright eyed. Nobody knew it was impossible. Too naive to think of how high the mountain was.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle called me one day. He sold fur coats and said, hey, I sold a fur coat to this costume designer. You call him up and you tell him I sent you. And I did.
Huh.
And he said, come on in. I'd like to meet you. And he was the lead costume designer on Moonlighting.
Oh, wow.
And I'd like to say the rest was history, but it wasn't. He said, you have to get in the union. So I said, okay, how do you do that? And he said, you have to work in a costume house for 30 consecutive days. So I went to every costume house and relentlessly called them and wore them down until someone hired me. And they did.
Wow. And then,
I called him back and said, I'm in the union now. they would call me in when they'd have the big extra scenes with, mm-hmm. you know, the Taming of the Shrew episode when they'd have 300, 400 extras on set. And I would just help do that.
So were you ever like a head designer, like designing, like being the go-to person for designing all the costumes on a certain movie or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No, I was always one of the assistants.
Oh, okay. Any particular movie or show or anything that stands out as being your favorite or the one that you thought was the most interesting to do?
The one that I thought was the absolute most interesting was a play on in the Tiffany Theater on Sunset Boulevard called Nightclub Confidential. And I had met this really fun, young, up-and-coming actor who had just driven there with his wife and his daughter, and they were, you know, basically camping at friends' houses, and he was doing this play for free, as we all were, to try to make more connections. And his name was Scott Bakula.
Huh.
And it was great. It was a great play. It was a great group of people, and it was really fun.
How cool. Is there anything, do you ever look back now and sort of miss it, or are you just like, oh, that was a chapter, and I'm glad that's...
Yeah, I think the latter. That was yeah, it was good.
So was, leaving from LA and that whole scene, and you say, how long were you up in the Bay Area for?
7 years. 7 years.
And what did you get into while you were up there?
I went into sales. So yeah, so after the strike and all of that, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to sales. And I did.
Was that a hard transition? Because that's a whole different, like, sales in what particular field?
Well, it started with advertising sales, selling, magazine advertising sales and that kind of thing. And I've sold all kinds of, once you're a salesman, you're a salesman. And I like to think that that's actually the tool that's been the most useful for the One Room Challenge when it comes to talking to brands and things.
Yeah.
But really, I was a salesman when I went to all those costuming houses and I just kept coming back to them to get them to finally hire me. It was all of those skills.
Was it just, I would imagine the writer strike and all that kind of stuff, like that, you're saying that was the real catalyst for being like, I can't do this because this is just.
Yeah, it was unemployed for 9 consecutive months. Like it was a problem.
Yeah. And so you had to find something and you're just like, looked at print advertising.
Yeah.
Wow. And so that's what you were doing up in the Bay Area.
Yes. So I was doing that. And then I went to work for a different company and that's where I met my husband.
And you felt like you were sort of a natural in that world?
Sales is hard, but yeah, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the process of it and things, it's very, progressive in that every sale is your last, every last sale is your last and you keep trying to get the next one and the working on dropping the seeds in the water to make the bigger one. And mm-hmm. it's a lot of, constant, what is it? Trial and error.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's challenging.
And were you doing the same thing when you landed in New Jersey?
No. So then we went to the UK and I became a mom and I couldn't work over there because it was my husband's job that put us there. So I didn't have a work visa or anything. And then when we came to New Jersey, I thought, right. So I have, and then we had another son who was born in New Jersey. And so I've got two kids and what do I want to do kind of thing. And mm-hmm. so after, we were renovating the home that we were living in and I was completely addicted to renovating. I mean, that was really it. I wanted to do that.
Had you always been into that?
Always. Yeah. I mean, you've had it on your podcast. People have said it a million times. Yes, I was the kid that redid my bedroom a million times and moved everything. And, I'll go into places and I just immediately start thinking things should be different. And And I started a blog because everybody was blogging and that was the time and the age. So
what year was this?
That was 2000 and what was it? 2010, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, around 2010.
So this was sort of before too much social media, right? So this is all blogs.
Yes, this is before Instagram. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Instagram hadn't started yet.
Okay. And how did you come across like, not only am I going to do, work on projects in my home, but I'm going to make a blog out of it. What spawned the whole? Like, because were you a writer? Did you have writing skills? Like, what made you want to do the blogging thing?
So I was a blog reader because we were renovating our home and I was finishing, trying to get ideas of home renovations and things. And I would read a lot of the blogs back at the time. And I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sort of do my own online journaling about my processes and what I'm going through. And I started out as a DIY blogger. Okay. And my focus was a lot of gardening. Because I became very passionate about gardening. Only the problem was it was really only 5 months a year in New Jersey that you could do that.
Right.
Outside.
Because of the snow and winter. Yeah.
And then I needed I made friends with other bloggers and I needed motivation to get some rooms done. And I thought of this idea of this one room challenge and asked a couple of blogging friends if they thought it would be useful and beneficial and motivational for them too. And we all agreed and went up as a pack to sort of finish a room in our house and document our progress. And that's how it started.
So how did you come up with this idea? Where did it originate? I mean,
from the motivation of me needing to finish a room using peer pressure and support to get it done.
So it was really just, it was a tool to put pressure on yourself to finish a project.
Yes. And as I read all these blogs from all these professional designers, there was one theme. Nobody had a finished room in their house. And so it just seemed like finishing the room was the real challenge.
Wow. That's interesting. And so at that time, when you put together your first little group, how many people are we talking about?
I think there were 15 originally, 15 bloggers. Yeah.
Okay. And were these people that were already sort of established in the blogosphere space or?
Yes, they were. I mean, I wouldn't say they were established in terms of famous, you know, blogging famous, but we were a clique. We all knew each other.
Okay. And how did you go about connecting with them? Were you just commenting on their posts? Were you emailing them?
Yeah. So this is wild to think of it today, but back in the day, you would wake up and you would either get your friends' blogs by email, or you'd go to their websites, check in on, see if they have any new postings, and you would comment, and you'd spend a good hour, 2 hours a day commenting on what your friends had been doing and letting them know that you support them and you had some information to share about whatever they were working on. And it was a real networking thing. And so,
and that commenting and all that kind of stuff, that was organic, right? This wasn't like a, cause I know
completely
nowadays you have these things, you know, these, what are they called? Instagram pods, where you have people saying, well, I'll comment on yours and you comment on mine. And it was sort of, it's like an agreement to where they try to increase each other's engagement and that kind of thing.
Oh, you know, this we weren't smart enough for that. We were just being friends and
it's totally
genuinely
legit.
Interested.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. And then, so how long did you sort of do it, in that way where it was kind of just, let's say, maybe not as organized as it obviously will once become. At what point how long did you do it for before it became like a business idea or something bigger than just what it was there?
It became a business idea faster than I ever had thought about it. I sort of backed into it and didn't really have time to think about it, because by the second time we did it, a very large online e-tailer wanted, I coined the phrase one room challenge. It didn't mean anything. I made up the words. And a very large e-tailer wanted to host their own one room challenge. And the only way I could protect the name was a trademark. So very early on, I had to decide, am I all in or not? Because trademarking is expensive.
Right. Yeah. When you apply for it, if you do anything wrong or incorrect, like there's all sorts of crazy fees.
Exactly. I mean, right. The truth is you need to hire a good trademark attorney. And I learned the hard way, because I did try to do it more of the DIY yourself way. And through a website that says they have the forms to do all of these things.
Right.
And it wasn't right. It wasn't the correct way to do it.
Yeah. If you put the wrong code or, you know, for product classifications, yeah, all that kind of stuff, it can really come back to bite you. So
right.
Moral of that story, hire a lawyer.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And then most recently, only a couple of years ago, my attorney had said, no more than a couple, but anyway, he said, you should really be trademarked internationally. All right. And I did. And sure enough, 6 months later, someone in Canada, a business in Canada, tried to host a one room challenge. And only because I was internationally trademarked was I able to say, I'm really sorry, but think of another name.
Yeah. Got it. And so that would have been what it only, you said just the following year, somebody had come in and to do that?
Yeah, it was within a year. So it's been trademarked for a very long time.
And so from that second year, when you were doing it, was it already like, okay, well, this is a plan now. This is what I'm going to do.
Well, yeah.
Or was it just, oh, I'm just going to do what I did last year with my same group of 15 people? Or did you notice it expanding that second year aside from that one?
Oh yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. Almost immediately emails would come in. How do I join? How do I do this? This is great. This is one of the best things I've ever seen. This looks like fun. I love following along. Other bloggers covered it. Mm-hmm. They were asking people, are you following this thing these people are doing? And it just became organic and grew from there. And so the requests of people that wanted to do it grew to the point that I said, all right, well, there's got to be a way to open it up and let people play along.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, I don't know if you had or you hadn't, that first year, did you already have kind of rules in place? Like, okay, this is what we're going to do. you post once a week? Like, did you already have that sort of layout?
Yeah, it was pretty loose, but it was the same. It's the format has pretty much been the same in that it's, you know, every Wednesday you'll post your progress. If you don't get it up by Wednesday, you get it up by Thursday or Friday. But once a week you'll get up your progress, and no progress is progress. It's, I didn't get anything done this week. That's all right. We're all just here to support each other kind of thing. Life happens. And yeah, and then hopefully, you know, toward the end, you've got something to show for it.
And so you, even posting that you didn't do anything that week, you would still do a post saying, oh, I didn't, I got busy.
Supposed to. that was the loose guidelines. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then at some point, not too far after that beginning, social media must have come into play. How did that, what was your sort of introduction to social media, and was it something that it was immediately affecting the One Room Challenge, or was it, did it take a little while to sort of catch on in that sphere? What was the effects and your initial sort of, introduction into social media?
It was slow. It was, I am still a huge proponent of websites, and I know everybody's all over social media, but the reason why I believe in websites so much is it's the only place you own. Mm-hmm. You can own your emailing list, you own your domain, you own the way it's the content is fed, and only until recently were you able to show up in a Google search outside of a website. You know, Google searches didn't include Instagram and other things mm-hmm. that they do now more so. So, it was always a blogging event for a very long time. And then people stopped wanting to do upkeeps of blogs and they wanted to only post on social media. And that was fine. And so now it's open to, you can post and join in anyway. You can join in on TikTok. You can join in on Instagram. You can join in on a Facebook post if you wanted. And you can join in on a blog. So it's up to you on how you want to join the event and participate and meet people and transform the room.
What was the noticeable effect from social media, though? Like when you started to get these sort of requests? I mean, because even initially, you still had the blog requirement for a while, even when social media was a big part of it.
Right. Yes.
How did you sort of start including the social media aspect in the very beginning? And did you notice just a huge explosion of interest from it being on Instagram?
I think so. The hashtag One Room Challenge is really where it, I noticed when I would look up the hashtag on how many, you know, counts it would have and things and being used. And then I think still for a very long time, a lot of digital editors continue to go to the ORC site and find features. And there's been all kinds of product launches and books. And one of the rooms was in a television show and all different things. And the end of the day, though, those digital editors want larger photos. And those larger photos tend to live on websites. Mm-hmm. So we would still and continue to encourage people to have a place where you have your larger photos and things in case you're wanting to be featured more than just a social media. And then, you know, now we keep looking at it like social media is going to possibly be more regulated. Maybe they're going to cut back on some platforms. Other platforms and algorithms are making it impossible for people to see what they're interested in. So it will continue to change. It will never change in your favor. It will always change for a business reason. And once again, the website's going to be the only thing that you own and you control.
Yeah, I definitely see the value in having a website because it is the only place that's like, it's like your television channel. It's your place that you own, that you have 100% control over your content. You can decide what you want to do with your pages. And it's just, it's an easy place for people to go find you. Whereas, yeah, now, you know, people post stuff on whether it's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, and you just don't know who's going to see anything you post. And,
right.
And you sort of become a bit of a slave to the algorithms because, you know, you have to post this much and at this time, and it's sort of dictating to you what you're doing all the time so that you can just show up in somebody's feed.
Right.
Yeah.
Agreed.
When you're setting up your website, the One Room Challenge website, how was the One Room Challenge website, I guess, part of the whole competition?
So it's not a competition, but the event.
Events. I was looking for the right word. Wins. I was like, event.
Everyone wins. That's the good news.
Was it always like that? Was there never was like a winner or even like, but you did feature some, right?
We did feature some. The editors, I've had several media partners. I started with House Beautiful and then I went to Better Homes and Gardens, and I'm currently with Apartment Therapy, who has done and continues to do an incredible job on shining the spotlight on the greatest number of people in features on their site. And several of the editors back in the day would select their quote favorites, I wouldn't say winners, their favorites, to be featured designers and to have more of a highlighted position in a future round. And that's how we met. That's how Jewel Marlowe was selected by the editors. I can't remember if it was Better Homes and Gardens or House Beautiful at the time, but I know it was a Milton and King wallpaper that she had in her room.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's great. We've worked with her a whole bunch, and it's funny because I remember seeing her like just in the very beginning. I was the contact person for all that. And I could immediately see with her style and what she was doing, it's like, oh, she's talented. She's, you know, engaging. Like this is just the beginning for her. She's going places in that world. And, you know, sure enough, she's, you know, gotten some incredible opportunities, and she's, you know, running her own interior design business for pretty high, you know, like high, what do you call it? High end clientele.
Yeah. Big budgets and things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly. And it was the perfect example that she was just a micro influencer, and, you know, you weren't looking for the biggest, largest following. I'm sure when she approached you, but you could see that the quality was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so at what point did you, when you're in the very beginning of setting up the One Room Challenge, how did you get companies involved and sponsorships and all that kind of stuff? Was that something from the beginning, or was that like year two when they started coming to you about that stuff, or did you seek that out? How did that come about?
So once I made the financial investment of trademarking, I had to figure out how I was going to justify it. And I think that's where my sales background came in, because I would solicit for sponsorship as well as people would come in and approach. Lowe's approached me early on. They had been following it and saw it. They were one of the early sponsors. And so it was a combination of both.
So at the beginning of the One Room Challenge, like you initially mentioned, it was very blog focused, and then, but you also had, so there were, you would get featured designers and then you have guest designers, right? So what was the difference between the featured and the guest in terms of like when you would start a brand new One Room Challenge, you'd be like, these are our, were they called featured designers, or they were like,
they were, okay. They were, yeah. Yes. So the difference was, is that the sponsorship that I would get would be specifically for the featured designers. And that's what I worked on and focused on. And then as time went by, we had the 10-year anniversary, and it seemed so right at the time for the 10-year anniversary to flip the spotlight and shine it on the greater number of people and have no featured designers. And it was really a success. All the sponsorship went to all the participants, and it's stayed that way ever since.
When you were having the featured designers, what was it about them that made it so that they would be featured designers? Because if I remember correctly, there were some that were in the early days, they were guest designers and then they'd become featured designers.
Right. So that's how I'd find the featured designers would be from the people that participated. It's all about, I mean, this is what every single brand does. It's all about vetting. Everybody would be vetted, and they were not vetted for their size. They were vetted for their quality of imagery, mm-hmm. number one, first and foremost, because there's no point in sending anyone product and working with anyone if they don't know how to take a picture and showcase what you've just provided them.
Right.
So that's where it started. And then it also became, do they know how to tell a story? Because you might be one of the best designers ever, but if you can't take viewers through the process of transforming a room, then it doesn't fit with this program.
Mm-hmm. So what was the initial thought behind saying, okay, I'm going to do away with featured designers and just do, you know, kind of open it up to everybody? What was like the...
It was the 10-year anniversary. It was on the 10-year anniversary. It was truly a celebration and just... It was really the community. The entire community made this event possible, continues to make this event possible, is so supportive, so positive. You never hear people talk about negative comments, not in this event, not here. It isn't a culture for that. Everyone wins. There is no winner. Everyone wins. So, you know, if you're a renter, I want to see what you're doing. If you're on your fifth home, I really want to see what you're doing. If you're DIYing it, great. If you hired a professional, I'm sure there's some tips I'm going to learn from watching a professional. It's meet everyone where they're at.
Did you find that, you know, obviously making that decision, it seems like there maybe would be, was there like a relinquishing of control on your end at all when you did that, from going from having featured designers and certain people that you'd spotlight to just being like, okay, it's, you know, sort of like a free for all, everyone's involved. Was there sort of a change in the amount that you could control or, I guess, vet at all?
Yeah. I mean, to be really clear, you could never really, controlling any of it was like herding cats. You know, you really can't control people when they're, and you don't want to on some level when they're, you know, running with design in their home and what they're doing, and their voices are what make them all special and unique, and reading and seeing and hearing their voices. So yeah, there was definitely a change, but I'd say the change was educating the sponsors. There are no longer 15 people that I have vetted for you, or 20 people. It got to 20. There are no longer 20 people that I have vetted for you that, you know, you're going to collaborate with. Now it's open to 200. Mm-hmm. Now there are 200 people. Let's talk about what you're looking for as a brand and what you'd like to collaborate with. And the majority of my sponsors are not like Milton and King that is globally accessible. The majority of my sponsors would want the lower 48 states. So that knocks out quite a few people, because we have participants in Dubai, Australia, Ireland, Canada, the UK. I mean, literally all over the world have participated. So you'd have to take requests from the brands more about what they're looking for and try to match that with the people that have registered. Mm-hmm. And it became a new skill.
I noticed on your site, you had the thing that said One Room Challenge International. It had Jamaica on there and it had the UK.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy. So how do you have, like, I know you said you,
that
your
is 100%. Yeah, that is 100% social media. Okay. That is it. If you could say, what did social media do for it? It opened it up globally.
Okay. And so what is it that, let's say someone in Australia or something, or in the UK, and they want to participate, what do they have to do, and what benefits do they get from associating with the One Room Challenge?
Well, the benefits that everyone gets associating with the One Room Challenge is community support. You're going to, if you're looking to meet people and to grow your own following and really connect and make a few friends in the lonely, lonely environment of social media, this is the prime way to do it. And we recommend that everyone, when you start, you find a few buddies that you're interested in their rooms, and you follow them, and you stay committed to a group that works for you, and support them. And you're going, by the time this is over, you will have made some friends. You're also going to come up with a lot of content. So it keeps you on a schedule to create content that's great for multiple platforms that you can reuse in many ways. If you're international, I won't have as much sponsorship to offer you, but you do, through participating in this type of event, have something to offer a brand by telling them you're participating in an event like this, where there is a media partner, Apartment Therapy, and they are committed to shining the spotlight on the greatest number of participants. And so you're just going to grow.
Yeah.
And you're going to get a room done.
Right.
That was the whole point of all of it.
Two questions. So one is about the sponsorships, and one is about your partners. Sponsorship wise, is it always, like free product, or are some places just giving discounts on product? What is sort of the range of sponsorship types that come through from companies that get involved with One Room Challenge?
So I don't get involved in the negotiations between the brands and the participants. I make the introductions, or the introductions are made through the registration and the circulation of information. And then however they work it out is between them. It ranges from gifted product to paid, paying the influencers to create content for them, and everything in between that scale.
Oh, okay.
So it depends, as everything, in how large is the ask. On both ends, what are you expecting in return, and how big is the influencer? Because all influencers are not created equal. Where are they in their brand collaboration growth? Are they newer to it? Have they been doing it very long? Do they have their own brands that they already represent and work with, and this is going to be something they're just going to do for one of them? It's really diverse now.
Yeah. Now, you said, I think you said initially you had worked with Home Beautiful, then Better Homes and Gardens, and now Apartment Therapy. Is that right? Did I have those right?
Yeah, House Beautiful. Yeah.
House Beautiful, sorry. When you work with someone like Apartment Therapy, what is your role in that process? Are you just sort of platforming all the participants and saying, you know, have your pick? What is the curation? What is your involvement with kind of what they're doing and what they're spotlighting?
So there is a huge separation between editorial and me. They can't be told what to write. Mm-hmm. You know, they have free autonomy on their site to do however they please, obviously. But if you go to the Apartment Therapy's website and there's a place where you want to be featured by them, on the drop-down menu, one of the questions is this part of the One Room Challenge? And that's all I'll say. And that's an opportunity to say yes or no. And whatever happens after that happens.
Right. So I guess it's a way for them to sort of filter things out and say, okay, these people are obviously, you know, DIYing, doing a makeover of their room, and they've most likely got, you know, lots of content. Right.
A lot. Yeah. There'll be a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
There's going to be some original ideas. There's going to be some really creative, transformations.
Gotcha. Okay. And I imagine that because I'm pretty, Apartment Therapy's got a big reach. I'm guessing that has only magnified the growing interest in the One Room Challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Room Transformations, I hear, is their number one, their highest interest on their site. That's what their readers want to see the most, are Room Transformations. So it's a really good fit.
Yeah. I mean, it is so engaging to see, you know, a place go from kind of the before and after. I think even on our socials, you know, the highest rated things are seeing the before and after, is seeing things go from, you know, this, then this, you know, it's just...
Yeah. It never gets old.
Yeah. You know, and it showcases, you know, people's creativity and their personalities. There's so much sort of in it that that people just love to see.
I mean, how many brilliant ideas have you seen? I've forgotten more brilliant ideas than I could ever remember seeing. Yeah.
Are there any that stick out to you? Like out of, you know, be hundreds now over the years. Are there any sort
thousands.
Of like that? Are there any in particular that stick out to you that you go like, that one I really love? Like I'm sure you love lots of them, but are there any
there's
that
so
stick
many.
Out head and shoulders above anybody else? Or
I mean, there's so many. DeBito, when he did his yellow dining room, I mean, that was early on mm-hmm. in the days. And I was in Anthropology the other day and I saw that he has a book, old brand new. And so I got it. And, in the book, there's a picture of his yellow dining room, and he even credits doing the One Room Challenge for it. And it's just so exciting.
Cool.
That's definitely one of them. The Homeboys, when they put your wallpaper on their ceiling and they did that custom headboard across the back of that bedroom.
Oh, right.
And the arched pocket doors. I had never seen arched pocket doors, and they had caning on them. I mean, it was so over the top, so incredible. There's just so many.
Yeah. Well, those are definitely two that I recognize as well. So moving forward, you know, the One Room Challenge is where it's at. And is there, Are there any other sort of changes or adjustments that you're making going forward, or things that you're thinking about going forward that you're, you know, toying with ideas and seeing where it's going to go, you know, in the next few years?
Yes, not specifically. I would say that the real focus right now, 100%, is growing the community. I think the community and engagement, I think after, especially after COVID, I think people are really looking for friendships and connections. I find social media really lonely, and I know I'm not alone in that. So that's the primary focus for me right now at the moment. But the event itself is constantly evolving.
That's really interesting. So, it's sort of, you wouldn't think, or I mean, I wouldn't think that was sort of like even on your radar. I'm like, yeah, you mentioned a couple things about it. Like in the very beginning, part of it was just about having peer pressure and, you know, finishing a room and connecting with other people. And you've mentioned how the community is so supportive, and everyone's just positive. They're all just sort of rooting for each other, which is so cool. But you mentioning that the social aspect is almost primary focus at the moment. What can you do to sort of, I guess, emphasize that aspect of it? Is there like a rule?
So each season, yeah, we do several things. There's an editor on the site who is constantly writing articles and talking about various people and introducing them to the people that subscribe to the website. And then we, each season of the event, we are constantly sharing on social media. Have you met so-and-so? So-and-so's doing her bathroom, you know.
So you're profiling them, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, is there, you know, was are there some sort of like comment rules or things like that that somehow sort of encourage people to interact more with each other to increase that social aspect of it?
So we have tips and suggestions that we send out. If you register and participate in the event, you will get a weekly newsletter, and each week you are going to get some tips on things you can do to maximize the event. And all of that is based on the community. We have polled and continue to poll the community and have asked them what has been helpful for you, what tips would you share to someone new, and get their feedback. Because again, you know, if you've been doing it for so long, you forget what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So you have to constantly ask other people and or let them tell you that what they found beneficial, and we share that.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so behind the scenes, we're telling you, you're here. Let's maximize all of this.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, so the One Room Challenge, that was initially once a year, wasn't it?
No, it was always twice a year.
It was always twice a year. Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought there was a change where it became biannual.
I thought moving it to once a year.
Oh, okay.
But then I couldn't decide, would it be spring or fall?
Right.
And each one has its advantages, and each season they still come. So yeah. Not today.
Do you find that the designs or the types of rooms that people are doing are different from fall to spring? Or is it all just the same?
I would say if you live in the Northeast, then yeah, I would say that you have less outsides in the fall than you do for the people in the spring getting ready for summer, moving outside. So it could be climate driven depending on where you are. But how the event has changed overall in general is the level of DIY and skills that go on now is mind-blowing. The amount of people that are capable of taking a sheet of plywood and building from scratch professional-grade cabinetry and shelves that look just as good as anything you'd ever see in a magazine is incredible.
What do you attribute that to?
YouTube. I don't know.
So it's just essentially what you're saying is the body of knowledge that people have access to has grown so much that
I would say the empowerment that people feel by watching DIY videos and things and giving them the confidence to try it themselves. Because that is, I hear people all the time in their videos say, I've never held a power tool before this. And if I can do it, you can do it. And all those kinds of things.
Yeah. That must be inspiring for you. I mean, just in general, I mean, you know, you started this whole thing and you must be always sort of impressed and blown away by seeing what, you know, what you've spawned.
I've accomplished more than I ever thought I could. I mean, I didn't even set out to accomplish anything. So I have exceeded all of my expectations, and I'm thrilled. I'm the biggest fan.
Now, seeing that this happens twice a year, how, as just, you know, from a personal question, like how much sort of brain space does the One Room Challenge sort of take in your daily life? Like, is it like when it's not the season, let's say it's, I don't know, July or August or something, are you thinking about the One Room Challenge? Is it something that occupies that space in your brain? Or is it kind of just like, you know, a couple of months prior, you start preparing? Or is it like a year round thing all the time? This is your baby. This is what you're doing all the time.
It's endless. I wish it wasn't, but it is. It's endless. It's endless. And I participated in the last One Room Challenge and worked on a room in my house. And I'm already getting ready for the spring event. I'm doing another room in my house. Because I am full circle. I'm in a different house and I don't have finished rooms.
When was the last time that you had done it prior to this last time?
Almost 10 years ago.
Oh, so you hadn't participated nearly the whole time. Was it?
Right. In the very beginning, I participated every time. And then when I moved to be more of a producer rather than a participant as well, I thought, I don't know if this is what this is going to be like, being behind the scenes and not actively being involved. And I loved being behind the scenes. I love watching and coordinating and rooting. So it was actually harder to convince myself that I was ready to jump back in and go on the other side and document a room transformation.
Did you feel any sort of pressure at all? Because, you know, you were the One Room Challenge person getting involved again. Like, did you feel?
No, because I feel like I did it semi-anonymously. I participated on my old website, and so I don't know who watches or who didn't. So I really did it for me, so it felt great.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I had no idea you participated.
I know.
Well, now I'm going to – so am I going to be able to check that out and see what it all looks like?
Full disclosure, I'm finishing late, just like you guys had someone finish late, because I had major delays and setbacks on one of the I had no sponsorship really on one of the products that arrived damaged and the whole thing, and I had to reorder it and all of that. So I'm going to get it up this week and I'll send you a link.
Okay, cool. I can't wait to see it. Yeah. So you had to get back in the seat of taking photos and doing content and all that kind of stuff, but you said you didn't have any real sponsors. So did you have to do much of that, like content delivery?
Well, I did it just for me, for weekly postings and staying on track and all of that. That part of it. But so the photograph thing is really interesting. When the room was finally finished in Florida, it must have rained for a month and a half straight. The room is my family room, and there are these very large atrium windows that I just had. We renovated our house and hurricane proofed it. And I had just got these large windows installed. And so the view was very important, and it was a rainy day every day for so long. And I kept rescheduling with a photographer to have it done. And it got so bad that I recently purchased a camera and took my own shots. And that's what I'm going to write my next blog post after this one about, that you really can do it, because I did it.
Yeah.
So that was very stressful.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, it doesn't take like a pro, but you do have to, it does take a certain amount of knowledge of, you know, lighting and photo composition. You want to make sure things are clear and, yeah.
And when you're shooting from inside to outside, the change in the exposure is really important.
Right.
And it has to be layered in Photoshop so that the outside is at the right lighting and the inside is also at the light, and neither one is blown out.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Huh. Okay. And so you had mentioned, you know, the One Room Challenge is constantly evolving. And are there any... is it all sort of hush hush? Are there any sort of like adjustments or things that you plan on doing for the spring 2024 challenge that's different than the previous? Or is this one going to be fairly...
just more features, just really being able to feature more and more of the rooms and let everyone know about these incredible transformations that are going on.
Okay. And anything sort of on the more long-term horizon, either for you personally or for the One Room Challenge or in general in sort of business, is there anything that's sort of big goals or things that you have like next 5, 10 years that you're looking at?
Oh my God, I know. I don't know.
Is that too stressful to even think about?
Yeah, that's too stressful. That's too stressful. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to move again, like, you know, hop around. So maybe I'll be in a different house.
Is that an actual consideration?
Because
you just hurricane proofed your house, it sounds like. So
I know. I have to stay here for a little while. My son's not through college yet. I have dreams of living in a city. So we'll see.
Are you a bit more rural in Florida?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So you're sort of looking at possibly going where it's a bit busier and
maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
But when you talk about you know, moving to a city, are you thinking like in Florida, like going to Orlando or Tampa Bay or, you know, that kind of thing?
My daughter lives in DC.
Oh, okay.
So part of me thinks maybe I'd like to live in DC. And then part of me thinks, no, I'm happy here.
Yeah, DC's very pretty. It's got all the seasons. It's
Not too bad on the winter part. I can't do the level of snow I had in New Jersey again. I think I'm done with that.
Yeah. It can get pretty brutal, especially like, you know, if you're up in Boston or something. It's
Yeah. And I'm a California girl. So that was a
shock. That's, you know, it's not easy for us Californians.
Right. We're snowbirds. We're pretty weak in that way.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it's great. I'm excited for the next One Room Challenge. I'm eager to see, you know, I always get, you know, real kick out of just seeing what people do and how people, I mean, you know, for Milton and King, how people use wallpaper. And it's always, you know, it's always interesting because there's some people use it in ways that I had never even thought of before. Recently saw somebody do like wood paneling using the wallpaper. It was really cool. So,
you should do it. I had two sponsors, two contacts at brands that participated.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought it was fun.
I'm the most unhandy person, I think. I think I would be terrible. But it would just be a train wreck.
There's no judgment that we have right now. I think that to my knowledge, there is a 70-year-old DIYer who participates quite a bit. And when I tell you everyone's rooting for her, everyone's rooting for her.
Yeah. I mean, everybody that sort of we talk to sort of just knows about it already. It's become...
That's just wild.
Yeah. It must be for you because, you know...
It's wild. It's wild and fabulous because, again, there's a whole community here. And so, yeah, so I don't think I ever answered your question before about the website. So the website is really built to have articles that showcase the participants. And then it's broken down by room types and ones featuring wallpaper. And so it's meant to be a resource, a continual resource for your next project or inspiration.
So even if you're not doing the One Room Challenge, you can still go to it and get all sorts of resources and inspo, right?
Absolutely.
And is that oneroomchallenge.com?
Yep.
Great. Well, I think definitely people should go check that out. Get inspired and see what people have done. Maybe it'll plant seeds for some new idea in somebody's home. And, you know, when I think about it sometimes, you know how sometimes people will go, you know, you try to figure out what you're going to invest money in and you go like, is this really worth it? Is that really worth it? You know, a lot of times when it comes to like bedding or something, you go, you do want to invest money into your bedding because you're in it, you know, ideally 8 hours a day, every day, you know, a third of your life or whatever it is. But when it comes to your home, you know, it's sort of the same thing. It's like, if that's where you live, that's where you wake up, you're going to fall asleep there. You're going to wake up there. You're going to spend all your time here. It's definitely a place that you want to invest some time, effort and money if you can, because
I couldn't agree more. My friend and I were talking about how that the irony of when you finally are ready to sell, you do all these things to fix up your home and you never enjoyed it that way.
Right. Yeah. Because you're trying to increase the value of it before you put it on the market. And
right. So you get it looking its best and then think, huh, could have been me.
Yeah, true. Well, thank you so much, Linda. I really enjoyed having this conversation with you, and we'll all keep in touch and we're all waiting for the next challenge.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed this.